Welcome to this podcast produced by Imagine, your resource for early childhood music therapy. Imagine is produced by Della Vista Publisher and can be found on the web at www.imagine.musictherapy.biz. The title of this podcast is Frame It in a Way Children Can Understand and features Leanne Finnegan in an interview with Dina Bolton.
Hi, I'm Dana Bolton, the contributing editor of Imagine Magazine, and today I'm here with Leanne Finnegan, and thank you for joining me on today's Imagine podcast.
Of course.
So the COVID-19 pandemic has raised great concerns for children's social, emotional development and mental health and well-being by caregivers, service providers, and professional organizations. In this year's Imagine podcast series, we would like to find out about challenges you face, how you promote good social emotional development and mental health in infants and young children, and what supports you give to their parents, caregivers, and communities. So I have 10 questions for you today. So the first question, where do you work and what is your role there?
So I work for First Steps Inc., which is in Nashville, Tennessee, and I'm the assistant director of the outreach program with First Steps. We are contracted with the state of Tennessee in the Tennessee's early intervention system to provide services to kids under the age of 3 that have developmental delays or disabilities. And we really focus on teaching and coaching parents on how to help their children with their development, to learn new strategies and skills that they can use at home, and overall just make their daily routines better. I've worked in early intervention since about 2008. And before that, my work was in mental health with children and adolescents. Personally, I also have a 7-year-old son who is on the autism spectrum, and he is my joy. And I feel like my job in a lot of ways prepared me for him, and he prepares me for my job too.
That's
so
awesome.
Kind of in a ball about me.
Awesome. So what's on your mind when you read about the difficulties in social emotional development among young children due to the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah. I feel like it's something I've definitely heard numerous times so far already in the last couple of years. So I feel like we're at a point now where all of our kids from birth to 3 don't remember a time before right. COVID. And so they really are struggling a lot of times with those social skills and those interactions with other people, because that's not something that we just know inherently. It's a developmental skill that we have to learn like anything else. So when we have lack of exposure with both adults outside the home and other children, that can precipitate what looks like a social emotional delay, but it really is just from lack of exposure and lack of experience. Sometimes that can lead to communication delays from just not being able to communicate with other children and learning that back and forth and that conversation with others. So you know, it is concerning, and I wonder what these kids are going to look like in the future. But I think, thankfully for the families that I see, they've reached out for help. And I think that that's an important piece for any parent who may realize that, hey, there's something I'm concerned about with my little one. It's just to reach out and see if services are available and if some supports might be needed, because it's definitely out there.
Right. Yeah. Cause these really are skills that don't just develop. They have to be practiced.
Oh, yeah,
and when kids don't get that chance to practice, they don't get a chance to learn.
Yeah, exactly.
So how has COVID-19 affected the mental health of your clients? And I know with your job, that's not just the kids, but also the parents.
Yeah. Now, I often think, you know, and myself included as a parent of a child with special needs, that in a lot of ways, I feel like we're impacted immensely because we rely on so many services and things in the community that for a long time, either were not available or were available in a way that maybe didn't work for our child. And so, you know, and for our families that have more medical needs, they still have to go. They have to access their doctors, their therapists, other support staff, and honestly, some respite care to give themselves a break. And so I think it's become a game of weighing what is the least risky choice that I can make right now, and that's still going to be beneficial for my child. And that's a mental gauntlet that our parents are having to run all the time. And sometimes there's honestly not a good choice, you know, and that's really hard. So I think really I see it more on the parent side of things, but of course it's affected our children and how they may not have as many interactions with grandparents or loved ones that they don't get to see as often, or they only see through FaceTime calls or Skype. And so, yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a rough couple of years. And I think we've all kind of played the game of like, what's the best choice that we can make and still keep our families as safe as we can.
Right. So how have you adjusted your services to meet these mental health needs during the pandemic?
Yeah. Well, part of what our service model is we always do a check-in with the family. And I feel like, especially about 2 years ago in March 2020, we really shifted to almost a social worker mindset, making sure that parents had all of the resources they needed to provide for their families. We had families that had lost their jobs and couldn't provide for themselves anymore. Families that were going to be homeless, that didn't have food to finish out the week, and the wait list for food stamps or government assistance was a mile long. And so we really had to be cognizant of community resources that were having food drives that weekend when a family was going to run out of food, or connecting with other community agencies, nonprofits, churches that could help with rent or other necessities. Really having to go back to that, you know, Maslow's hierarchy. Right. If you don't have food and housing and you're not safe, you're not going to be able to work with your child and right. to help them with their development, no matter how much you want to. And then on the flip side of that, for our families that kept their jobs, a lot more of them were having to work from home and then trying to manage with these little kids at home. And it's stressful. And my husband and I went through that as well, having to work from home with our 7-year-old that we kept home to do online school. And so I feel like, again, whichever situation the families were going through, we were trying to just be supportive and give them resources and information about whatever those needs were that they had in the moment. And of course, those changed over time, and just adjusting and continuing that check-in to make sure that they were okay.
Right. And I know our issue last year was all about telehealth, and I know that you guys did switch to an online model. So how did that look with, you know, being a focus on parent coaching? How did that, what did that look like through telehealth?
Yeah. So I was very pleasantly surprised at how well it worked. Mm-hmm. Before the last 5 years or so, we were, you know, child direct services. And so that's obviously not really possible with children 3 and under. And so with this family coaching model, all we had to do was tell a parent, like, set up a phone or computer where we can see you guys and see what you're doing, and we will talk you through it. And just, we would coach parents to practice different skills with their children. If something didn't work, we would say, all right, let's throw it out and we'll try something different. I feel like it worked very well. Of course, there were some families and some parents that even accessing the technology was difficult. And right. so we try to keep in touch with them over just doing phone calls. And, you know, when we've offered in-person services, putting them at the top of the priority list to receive those in-person services when they've not been able to access the technology. But all in all, I'm just so thankful that, you know, for the last 2 years, we've still been able to serve these families. And then we've all kept our caseloads full for the last 2 years. So it's not been a concern as far as, you know, having enough families that want the services, because they're still out there and we're happy to serve them.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So what are ways to help children struggling with pandemic related stress, fear, or grief through your developmental therapy interventions? And were there any ways that you used music with the families?
Yeah. So I'm somebody that's always going to recommend being as truthful and honest with kids as possible in a way that they will understand. So just as an example, when COVID started, my son was 5 and he really did not understand the idea of a global viral pandemic. So he was really into Wreck-It Ralph at the time. And if you've seen the movie, there are these cybugs that like hide underground and they multiply and then they like bust out, which is honestly kind of terrifying. But that was a way that he understood. Like, there are these cybugs out there and we have to wear masks so they don't get us and those kind of things. And so sometimes you have to get creative, but I honestly think that kids really understand a lot more than we give them credit for. And so they can pick up on when, you know, mom and dad are stressed or we're staying home all the time and I want to go to the park and why can't I go? Mm-hmm. And so thinking of those ways that we can explain those things to kids in a way that they can understand can help them to not be as fearful. And then on the flip side, like sometimes being able to admit that we don't have control over everything, but we're going to do our best to keep them safe and to take care of them. And that's why we're doing all of these things. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a, not a divide, I'd say, but my husband and I, like, I love when my son asks why, because I want to explain to him why we're doing something. But where my husband is like, just do it because I said so. I'm like, no, explain, explain why. Mm-hmm. Because then you teach them to have those critical thinking skills too, of, you know, why do I have to do this? Why is mom telling me these things? And then they develop those skills on their own over time.
Right. I noticed that with my 7-year-old, of when teaching, you know, explain to him that he had to wear a mask and telling him why. And then for him, it was like, okay, that makes perfect sense. And he's the one who, you know, he puts his mask on when he doesn't need to sometimes, and because he just wants to, or he asks questions and he recognizes the situations where he needs to, because he was taught why it was important.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So how can parents nurture their child's mental health?
So again, I think I take it back to the parents again. I think parents can really nurture their child's mental health by nurturing their own. So what we do at my house is a lot of what I call co-regulating. So you tend to hear a lot of talk out there about children not knowing how to self-regulate or how to calm themselves. And again, that's something that they have to learn. It's not something that we just know. And so what I've really found is keeping myself calm in the moment helps my son to stay calm and to be able to calm himself. Because for better or worse, when our kids are upset, when they're crying, we get a little riled up and we get a little upset. And so it's honestly a way for me to calm myself at the same time that I'm calming him. Right. So a lot of times that looks like I'm going to get him to come over to me and just hug him really tightly and talk to him about listening to my breathing and talking him through it. And then I can, when I'm holding him, I can hear and feel him calming himself. And so I feel like that has been really helpful, because then we're working through it together and I'm not just getting upset, which makes things worse. And then he's able to calm down and move on to the next thing. And I think in general, you know, with any parent, it's as much as you can control your own emotions and your responses, the more successful that will be for your children. Because yes, especially our little ones, twos, and threes have some big emotions, but we've had a lifetime to try to figure out how to handle those, and they haven't. And so trying to stay in control of ourselves so that we can help them work through those big emotions.
Right. Exactly. And so I know you've touched on this a little bit already, is talking about accessing community resources, but how can we best support communities to build sustainable mental health and well-being for infants and young children and their families?
Mm-hmm. So I think just keeping that conversation open around mental health is the key, as well as including in our teaching with parents that mental health from infancy is important. It's oftentimes just as important as our physical health, and it even as adults can kind of get left behind. We know that young ones can internalize traumas that they experience when they're really young, and they don't have the words to talk about it. And that can often come out later in life in ways that we don't always expect. So, you know, if our brains experience something, even if we can't verbalize it, our body may remember. And mm-hmm. and so we have to teach parents early on that that mental health is important to foster. And I think that expands out from the family into the community, as far as if you're involved in a church, if you're involved in a nonprofit, to bring up to your leaders about mental health initiatives that you could put in place in your organizations. Because I feel like it's something we all know is important, but we don't necessarily know how to expand that and make it a wider thing that we're all working together to try to lift everybody up mm-hmm. with their mental health.
Right. Right. So what are some resources that you recommend that either you've used personally or you've recommended to parents to help with this?
Yeah. Well, I would always recommend, if you have concerns under age 3, to reach out to your early intervention program.
Yes.
And you can Google that. Every state has an early intervention program. I'm in the state of Tennessee, so I could talk all day about that one. But you can look for that information online and get connected. One resource that I really enjoy as far as behavior and mental health for little ones is called Big Little Feelings, and it's on Instagram. Mm-hmm. They post just little snippets of things that you can do to address behaviors and mental health things with your kids. And they also have an online class that you can pay to take. And I've got a couple of friends that have done that and said it was excellent. Mm-hmm. There's a website called Baby Navigator, which again looks at development, early childhood development, but also has some social emotional regulation and mental health things included in there. And I love the Division for Early Childhood. They mm-hmm. have so many resources, and they're constantly posting things on their Facebook and social media about different early childhood things. I don't know what to say there. different early childhood resources. And it's a international community. And so there's always somebody there that has something to share that would be of interest to you.
Right. And so what are your hopes for these pandemials? And I know you talked about that a lot of the kids you work with don't remember anything. And even with our own boys, it's what, over a third of their lifetime has been lived during this pandemic. So what are your hopes for them in the future?
Yeah. Well, I feel like, you know, we hear over and over how kids are resilient, right? And it's unfortunate that there are events that cause them to be resilient, but it's a lucky thing that they are. And mm-hmm. they seem to have such a positive outlook on so many things. And so my hope is that, you know, for these kids that have been in home for 2 years and have been kind of, for lack of a better word, cut off from the rest of the world in a lot of ways, that they've had positive home experiences, that where they've had to be has been a positive place and a positive space for them. You know, and on the flip side of that, I really hope that all these good things we've heard about pandemic babies are true, that they're tough and they're smart and they're strong mm-hmm. and they can roll over when they're a week old kind of thing. And so I think if that mm-hmm. keeps going throughout their lives, that they're going to be able to tackle anything that comes their way. I mean, you live through a global pandemic in your first couple of years of life, I think you're right. set for the rest of your life.
And so just as this last question, can you share some advice for our listeners that are facing this mental health crisis right now?
Yeah. So I would say there's definitely no shame in seeking out help when you need it for your mental health. I've been in counseling multiple times throughout my adult life. And I think there's something just really valuable about having an impartial person come in and help you sort things out when life is overwhelming. I'm seeing a counselor right now, and I've joked with her, like, I'm just coming in here and unpacking my baggage, you know, like, let me just lay it out here for you. You know, and I understand I'm very privileged with the fact that I can access mental health care. And so, you know, I wanted to share, there is low cost mental health care through many nonprofits across the nation. And, that I would encourage Googling that and looking for low cost or free mental health resources in your community. Nationwide, if you need mental health support, you can text the word BRAVE to 741-741 to access a trained crisis counselor, or call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. And they can help you through an immediate crisis, as well as connect you with local resources for follow-up in the future in your community.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on the idea that we need to just normalize mental health, just like you would go to a doctor when you're not feeling well physically, that you go see a counselor when you're not feeling well mentally.
Right, exactly.
All right, well, thank you very much for sharing your insights and your time with us today.
Of course, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this Imagine podcast, produced in 2022.